Well, good evening to everyone that's made it out. We're going to continue our study of Jude, nearing the end. By my best count, probably two more lessons, maybe three, and then I'm calling a wrap on Jude. So we're getting close to the end. So we have a lesson titled this night, Six Metaphors of Ineffective Leaders. And so if nothing else tonight, hopefully you're going to leave with some better descriptive terms for your bosses. If you have a boss that doesn't know what they're doing, and instead of just falling back on, you know, on the good old standard of what a jerk, you're going to have six new terms that you can use to define an ineffective leader. And sometimes we don't even really notice it in the reading. It comes from verse 12 and 13. Sometimes it's a language thing, so I've had to kind of go back and pull up some different translations to really get the idea of what Jude is referring to. So we're going to go through verses 12 and 13. Six metaphors of false teachers. He says, these are spots in your love feast, while they feast with you without fear, serving only themselves. They are clouds without water, carried about by the wind, late autumn trees without fruit, twice dead, pulled up by the roots, raging waves of the sea, foaming up their own shame, wandering stars, for whom is reserved the blackness of darkness forever. So it may be kind of hard to pick out the six metaphors in there, but as we go through it, hopefully you'll see and kind of get an idea of what Jude was trying to write about. He was writing about ineffective leaders in the Lord's church. And not only were they ineffective, they were also sinful. And they were also destroying the church like a cancer from the inside, and were bringing the church down around them just for their own benefit, just for their own, I guess, financial gain, and probably for their own status. They were destroying the church from the inside. And so we're going to look at some metaphors for some ineffective teachers. Before we go further, let's go to God in the Word. So as we begin our study this evening, first thing we need to define is the word these. Because Jude says, these are spots in your love feast. So we need to go back and figure out who this these is referring to. And again, as it is with this whole passage, Jude is referring to these false teachers that have infiltrated the church. And they've come up and they've snuck their way in, and as they entrenched themselves in the church, they began to teach false doctrine. They have begun to make a mockery of some of the things, and Jude is not happy about it, and he says, we've got to fix this before the church is destroyed. And so, as we've talked about in several lessons, these are the same people that he has given the moniker of the dreamers. He talked about these dreamers. Well, he's got a whole bunch more phrases for them this afternoon, or this, as we go through this evening study, these six metaphors of these ineffective teachers that he's talking about. So number one, he says, these are spots in your love feast. Now, as I've read this in the past, I've never come across this definition. I've always thought of this when it says spots in your love feast. And I've also seen that word spots sometimes translated blemishes. I would have almost said in our vernacular, it's like they're a cancer. And so in the sports world, we use that sometimes. That guy, he's just a locker room cancer. Meaning that wherever that person goes, they destroy others that are around them. And so that's how I've always taken this verse. Judge Judy talks about the blueberries. He says, if you put a rotten blueberry in a crate with good blueberries, the good blueberries don't make the rotten one good. The spoiled one ruins everything. That's how I've always kind of taken this verse. Spots in your love feast. Where you ought to be together for good, there's someone who's a cancer, someone who's a negative influence who destroys others. However, upon doing a little research, there are some who believe that this Greek word here can also be translated, instead of spots, carries the meaning of a hidden reef. So if you were a sailor, you see this nice, calm, placid water that is covering a treacherous shoal. It's covering something that destroys the ships. That hidden reef would destroy the ship that is unknown to it, because it looks like it's such a tranquil and nice and peaceful lake. These people are like jagged rocks. just below the surface of the water, waiting to snag you when they join your love feasts. That's how the Common English Bible translates that verse. So I'm not really 100% sure what Jude is trying to say. I have a tendency to lean more with the idea of the jagged rocks, simply because the metaphors that he's going to use today are from nature. And so that one seems to make a little more sense to me, but I can go either way on this. So I want you to think about this idea of being shipwrecked, because that is something that we read in other scriptures. In fact, we might have done a better job had I named this lesson six biblical metaphors of ineffective teachers, because nearly every one of them is going to have a different meaning or a different usage somewhere else in the scriptures. So here we go, 1 Timothy 1. You probably already thought of this verse. Speaking of being shipwrecked. 1 Timothy 1 and 18. This charge I commit you, son Timothy, according to the prophecy previously made concerning you, that by them you wage the good warfare, having faith and a good conscience, which some have rejected. And so how does Paul refer to people that have rejected the faith and the good conscience? He says, concerning the faith, have suffered shipwreck. And so this idea of being shipwrecked, remember, this was a maritime people. This was a folk who understood the concept of being on the water and being on the ocean, and not necessarily the ocean, but on the Mediterranean Sea. They were a water-faring people. So this first metaphor used by Jude would be very meaningful, if indeed that is what it means, to a group of people who were very dependent upon the sea. They were fishermen. They were those that were caught up in storms. They understood the idea of how the winds and the contrary winds, and when they should leave port, and when they should have safe harbor. They understood what it was like, this threat of shipwreck. And so it appears that Jude is saying that you are hidden rocks. You're like hidden reef underneath the water. You're not seen, but you're dangerous. And you snag people without them looking. And they don't even know it's coming. You know, it's one thing if you want to decide to hang around a bunch of bad people. I mean, that's one thing. I've always heard that old saying, it's hard to soar like an eagle when you hang around a bunch of turkeys. If you want to hang around a bunch of turkeys and you pick a bunch of guys that are involved in all sorts of illegal, illicit activities, that's one thing. And you kind of get what you get. If you want to hang around turkeys, that's kind of what, that's how you're going to end up. But this carries a connotation of, you think you're hanging around somebody good. You think you're hanging around somebody righteous, and you're following someone who is doing it for the right reason. They're leaders of the church, and they're spiritual. And then to come to find out, no, they're nothing but a hidden reef. They are someone who's just waiting to pull you down. So that's his first metaphor. Now, I also pulled up here this concept. What are the love feasts? It says your spots in the love feast. The love feast was separate from the Lord's Supper, and I suppose we'd call them a potluck dinner. So I guess if we want to be real scriptural, next time we have dinner after services, we would say we're having a love feast. That's what they were called back in those days. Very common back in the early days of the church. So the idea is, especially think about folks in those days, they'd have to travel. They couldn't go back and forth to their homes. They would assemble somewhere to worship. They're coming from all over. Many of them just flat out dirt poor. And one of the highlights of the Lord's Day would be able to assemble one another after services and just have a love feast, what they call it. They'd just be able to assemble together and have dinner and have fellowship. And then lurking right there under the water, in the surface of the water, are these spots, or whatever you want to call them, these blemishes, this hidden reef, just waiting to take people down. So we get a kind of a connotation of this in 1 Corinthians chapter 11. We read this oftentimes before the Lord's Supper. Therefore, when you come together into one place, it is not to eat the Lord's Supper. For in eating, each one takes his own supper ahead of others, and one is hungry and another is drunk. What? Do you not have houses to eat and drink in? Or do you despise the church of God and shame those who have nothing? What shall I say to you? Shall I praise you in this? I do not praise you. So the Corinthians were apparently taking this idea of the love feast and the Lord's Supper and it intertwined the two. That was one of the things they were doing incorrectly because it talks about you don't have houses to eat in. And so those that had food to bring were kind of rubbing it in the noses of those that had absolutely nothing. And so the love feast, we kind of keep that in mind as the study. I just thought that was interesting. Number two, selfish shepherds. Now, you almost don't pick up on this in the King James Version. The King James Version renders it like this. These are spots in your love feast while they feast with you without fear, serving only themselves. And you might be saying to me, where did I get anything about a shepherd? Well, it's that part about serving only themselves. NIV renders it this way. These people are blemishes at your love feast, eating with you without the slightest qualm, shepherds who feed only themselves. And so again, we have this other metaphor from something that those folks understand. They were an awesome agricultural society. They would understand the idea of shepherds. So here's another biblical metaphor. Shepherds who feed only themselves. That's from Ezekiel. In Ezekiel 34:2, Son of man, prophesy against the shepherds of Israel. Prophesy and say to them, Thus says the Lord God of the shepherds, Woe to the shepherds of Israel who feed themselves. Should not the shepherds feed the flocks? So there's this idea of the shepherds who were supposed to be taking care of the flock, but they were more concerned with feeding themselves, taking care of themselves. They were not fulfilling their obligation. They were not fulfilling their job. They were taking care of themselves. They were self-serving. And so here he talks about shepherds who feed themselves. So think about the leaders of the church that Jude is writing to. They only cared about themselves. They had a responsibility to feed the flock. And instead, they were feeding themselves. Probably, I get a connotation that that's monetarily. I think they were taking whatever they wanted. They were doing whatever they wanted. They had some illicit relationships. It appears that they were kind of sexually illicit. It appears that they just kind of did whatever they wanted to do. And they took care of their own needs and their own wants. So there's our second metaphor, the selfish shepherd, which by the translation really doesn't even show up in the King James Version, but it's in other translations. Number three. Now this one ought to mean something to us out here because we can relate. They are clouds without water, carried about by the wind. So we're not going to get 36 inches of rain every year. Normally it's a whole lot less than that. So imagine Paul's got his garden going. I just think about my poor grass because I'm not going to water it because I hate to use all the old Collie Lane water. But you see this great big old storm cloud, and here it comes, and you're thinking, finally it's going to rain. I remember what a couple years ago was it that we had 100 consecutive days over 100 degrees or whatever it was, and everything is dying, it's parched, there's no rain. We're all in drought. We don't know where the water's going to come from. Trees are dying. Plants are dying. And here comes this great big old cloud. And it comes up. And the next thing you know, it just blows off. And nary a drop of rain comes out. How frustrating is that? I mean, can you imagine having your entire life and substance based upon whether or not rain fell from the sky? You can't go to Walmart and get a bottle of water. You have to have that water in your cistern or you're going to die. And here comes this great big old cloud and it gets right on top of you. And then next thing you know, it dissipates and 10 minutes later, you're back to 100 degree weather again. That's the image that he's saying. He said they're clouds without water, carried about by the winds. So they give this great hope, but then they don't fulfill the promise. Remember, he's talking about leaders of the church. So imagine being that poor farmer. You're being teased by the clouds that don't produce rain. So you think it's going to happen, and you have this great expectation, but just as quickly as they appear, those clouds dissipate, and you're left with absolutely nothing. Again, this is a biblical metaphor, and I'll mention this as well. He's talking about, remember, spiritual leaders. If you're a spiritual leader that doesn't have a spiritual heart, it's just as disappointing. You offer this great hope, but then you do not fulfill that hope. And the people are sitting there left with nothing. Here's another biblical metaphor, Proverbs 25:14. Whoever falsely boasts of giving is like clouds and wind without rain. So if you know someone who, they're always real quick, oh, I'll do this for you, I'll take care of this for you, you can count on me, and they're always boasting, I'll tell you what, I can do this, I'll do that. They are like clouds without rain. So that is not a compliment that we want to have. Number four. Compare with a teacher who appears to be ready to lead. Here we go, number four. Fruitless trees. He continues, he says, they're like late autumn trees without fruit, twice dead, pulled up by the roots. So here we have another example from nature. Autumn trees without fruit. Again, imagine having to count on those fruit trees for your sustenance, whether it be almonds, pomegranates, trying to think of some of the things they had back in those days, figs. And then you see the tree, it blooms up in the spring, and you were expecting this great harvest that never comes. And so it says they're like these late autumn trees without fruit. So very, very similar to what we just talked about with the rain cloud. A tree offers hope and expectation of a reward. You're ready for the fruit to come, so you can have this fruit to eat, and you're counting on it, and it doesn't live up to its expectations. And so you're hoping for something that never comes. Now what about this concept here, this phrase, late olive trees without fruit, twice dead? What does that mean? How can you have a tree that's twice dead? I'm pretty good at getting stuff once dead. But what does it mean to be twice dead, to have a tree? I mean, I've killed many a pecan tree and whatever we try to plant. I'm good at killing it. But what does it mean to be twice dead? Well, I'm not 100% sure. But I'll tell you at least common sense what it kind of means to me. 1 John chapter 3 and 14. John here writes, "We know that we have passed from death to life because we love the brethren." I just pulled that one verse. I could have pulled many from Ephesians and other places where we have this idea that as Christians, we have died to sin. So I could have pulled up any number of those. But we've passed from death to life, though, as we have started a new life. We've started a new Christian life. So we were dead, and now we are alive again. So as Christians, we've gone from death to life. But what happens if we fail to continue in the Christian life? Is that what Jude means when he talks about to be considered twice dead? That we were dead once, we were made alive through Christ, but then we decide, nah, I'm okay. And we become dead to the world again. I don't know. I look at 1 Timothy 5 and 6. Paul is writing here talking about this passage of the widows indeed. He says, "But she," speaking of the widow, "who lives in pleasure is dead while she lives." So I don't know if that's the same connotation, that she was dead again and she was twice dead. I don't know. But I get the leader, the idea of the leader, going back to what Jude is saying, they've lost their spiritual life and only looks to improve their own situation. That's dangerous because they are twice dead. And so may have some other thoughts on that. I don't know. I haven't been able to really peg down the meaning of what that verse is, of what that phrase means. If anyone has any other thoughts, be glad to hear. Now he does say again, late autumn trees without fruit, twice dead, pulled up by the roots. It's another biblical metaphor. That is from Ezekiel again. Ezekiel 17 and 9, "Thus says the Lord God, will it thrive? Will he not pull up its root, cut off its fruit, and leave it to wither? All of its spring leaves will wither, and no great power or many people will be needed to pluck it up by its roots." So that is an image, again, we find in the Old Testament. I went out, trying to think how long ago it was now. I guess it was last summer, and I wiped out an algerita bush. It was a huge algerita bush. I had enough of it. I wiped it out. It's back. You know, I didn't pluck it out by the roots. In fact, I think I just encouraged it to grow faster. I just pruned it because I did not pluck it up by the roots. When something is pulled up by the roots, that's it. It's gone. And so he uses this reference, late autumn trees without fruit, twice dead, pulled up by the roots. So number five, we have raging waves. He says, "Raging waves of the sea, foaming up their own shame." What's that about? Raging waves of the sea, but then they just turn into foam, and it's shameful. And I think what he's trying to say by that is, these waves appear powerful, And so, if you've ever been to the ocean, which we've been to California here a year or so ago, you look out and those waves are huge and they're crashing down. And you look out in the distance and it looks extremely powerful. And by the time it reaches the shore, it's nothing but foam. And you wonder, well, what happened to the great power of that wave? Well, by the time they reach the shore, all they produce is foam. And all they have is debris, dirt. And so what looks like a great powerful wave that could destroy a building is only able to move seaweed and twigs around. And so again, it's something that looks to be something that it's not. And so that kind of seems to be the common thread among all these metaphors is when you are not what you appear to be. And that was the case with those leaders. Leaders like this, you might say, are all bark and no bite. They're quick to tell you what they can do and what they're going to do, but then it never gets done. So we don't want to ever be considered in that boat. Isaiah has something to talk about waves like this as well. Isaiah 57:20 says, "But the wicked are like the troubled sea when it cannot rest, whose waters cast up mire and dirt. There is no peace, says my God, for the wicked." So Isaiah even picks up on this idea of the sea, the raging waves. The waves can't rest, but all it does is cast up dirt. It doesn't really do a lot. It sounds a lot worse than what it actually is. And finally, number six, the sixth metaphor. He says, "Wandering stars, for whom is reserved the blackness of darkness forever." So again, I'm having to go out on a little bit of a limb here about what does wandering stars mean. And I'm thinking it's likely he's referring to falling stars. What we would consider a falling star in the sky. Because stars are supposed to have an orbit. Stars are supposed to be set on a course and stay on that course. And all of a sudden, sometimes you'll look up and there'll be a streak just take off across the sky. We call that a falling star. He calls that a star that's wandered off its course. And remember, people used to count on stars back in those days for navigation. And they wanted to know where the star was and where the star was going because that's how they gave them a direction which way to go. So what would you do if you saw a star take off on a different course? Well, it takes you off of the path that you need to be on. It causes you to lose your navigation. Now, falling stars are bright. Falling stars catch your attention. Falling stars are beautiful. Falling stars are awe-inspiring. But if you're trying to follow one, it would take you off of your assignment course. So I think that's what he's saying here. Those are like the leaders in the church, but they lose their direction. And so they are supposed to be leading the congregation, leading the flock, but instead they've wandered off their course, and it says they've reserved the blackness of darkness forever. Other people, other commentators, think that maybe the wandering star refers to one who would come into one congregation, would lead them astray, and would then wander off and find themselves in a second congregation, and then would do the same. They would wander off to a third congregation, and they would just systematically always look for congregations to destroy. I don't know. I kind of like the idea of the falling star again, because I'm seeing the big picture. Jude appears to be picking things from nature, these metaphors that everyone would understand and see. So in conclusion, here's the six metaphors of ineffective leaders. And so we've been talking about leaders in the church. But keep in mind, this is leaders everywhere. This is leaders of the city. This is leaders of the family. This is leaders in business, leaders in the home, in our schools, wherever. If you consider yourself a leader, you better make sure that we have never described as a hidden spot or a selfish shepherd. A rainless cloud, a fruitless tree, a raging wave, or a wandering star. So like I said, if nothing else from this lesson, hopefully we've got some new and creative verbiage now that we can use to disparage our bosses if we need to, instead of just getting after them, to say that boss is nothing but a rainless cloud. And we'll know what that means. That is someone who is not what they appear to be. It's not what they represent themselves to be. They're hypocritical. The common denominator of all these metaphors is falling short of what is expected and not being what we represent ourselves to be. So in relation to the Lord's church, Leaders of the church have a grave responsibility to lead the congregation in a proper way that glorifies God. Not to glorify ourselves. Not for a leader to see how much money they can make. Not for them to put themselves in a position where maybe they can woo the younger female members of the congregation. And all these things that were occurring in the time of Jude, and really occur today too. That nonsense should never be a part of the Lord's church. If the leaders of the church are effective spiritual leaders like the Bible tells us to be. But when we become ineffective leaders, then we are candidates for any of those metaphors right there. And that's not what God expects us to be. And we're going to have to answer. He's going to go on in our next study. He calls them grumblers. He calls them complainers. And talks about how they try to use flattery words to get their way. That is not what the leader of the Lord's church is supposed to be. That's not what the leader of the family is supposed to be. That's not what the leader of our city and our country and our county. That's not what the leader of our businesses is supposed to be. If we are a leader, school, whatever, we are not supposed to act like that. We're supposed to be proper leaders and do it in the way that brings glory to God. So, that concludes our thoughts for this evening.